You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to continue our expectations series tonight. We're going to talk about Adafe Owe and Garrett Dellinger, the 7th round draft pick, interior offensive lineman, guard center, I guess we would call him at this point. Joining me to do that is Mike Fast. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Always a pleasure to talk football with you, Mike. Tell me about what you're doing right now. The last I heard, you were coaching some high school football locally here in the Towson area.
That's correct. So I was most recently defensive coordinator at Perry Hall. We went to the state semifinals the last 2 years, hosted that game actually, and lost both times to the eventual state champions. So I left Perry Hall, and I'm now looking at a few other coaching opportunities, a couple in-state and one out-of-state, and the decision should be made by the end of the month. So even though it's June 10th, still a lot going on, but all good stuff.
Well, best of luck to you anyway. I hope you're able to find your next landing spot there.
Thank you.
Let's go to the undercard of this and start with that. We've been doing that generally, and that'll be Garrett Dellinger, who's a seventh round rookie, right? Mm-hmm. Seventh round rookie draft pick out of LSU. Primarily played guard there, but he did play some center. We definitely had that pointed out to us today. But 6'4", 325, decent arm length for a center at almost 33 inches. Okay for a guard at that length as well, 32 7/8. 5.10 at his pro day in the 40. He was 23, in February after a four-year starting run at LSU. Outstanding testing otherwise. Did do 30 bench reps, which is excellent regardless of your arm length. Had great jumps. All that was done at his pro day. I'm still not too concerned about things like bench reps at the pro day. I don't know about you, Mike.
Yeah, I just like that guys are there and they test. And, you know, I like that he did that rep. I'm glad that he did that rather than something closer to 20 for a lineman. But for me, it's all about the tape. So testing is good. I'm glad he did it. He didn't get injured. And, we'll move on, you know.
He has a good body for a guard. He's not a complete pear-shaped build, but he's at 6'4", 325. He's filled out. Whereas if he were more of a leaner guy, you know, was 6'5", 310, and more like where Voorhees came into this league with 38 bench reps, much more comes in terms of anchor questions with that, and with a leaner frame. Doesn't matter how strong you are sometimes, that you can't overcome your frame. But Dellinger is built like a guard in a lot of ways to start with. He had an injury that held down his draft status this last year, though. Week 9, had to have tightrope surgery for a high ankle sprain. So this is a case where the tibia and fibula needed to be pulled together. And they used a polyethylene cord to do so. They tie them together, and they allow for the bone positioning and some natural regrowth in there. They leave the cord in there. They don't even try and take it out after the surgery.
Wow. Well, yeah, no, I'm glad he's healthy and interesting. We look at the left guard position, and I don't know about you. I go to Our Lads, a website that does depth charts, unofficial, mm-hmm. of course, but still somewhat of a, you know, reference point. And look at our left guard. The Ravens left guard spot now, 2 former seventh rounders who both entered the NFL with injuries. significant or coming off of significant injuries, I should say. So very interesting time at that position.
Yeah. And then of course, still Ben Cleveland there competing for the spot. And we'll see how that plays out, but he was specifically pointed out today and Dellinger wasn't by Coach George Warhop, who was at the podium today. We're recording this on June 10th. It'll be much later that this actually airs, but Warhop, you know, really was very specific about some things. And one of the things he said that was nice about Dellinger, and this is also true of Emory Jones, is that he really respected the lineman that came out of LSU from their offensive line coach. I still haven't looked up who that was because they tended to be pro-ready prospects.
Well, and that's must be a high compliment to get, not just because it's from Coach Warhop, who obviously is a tremendous coach, but that he recognizes your hard work and the program that LSU has established, particularly on the offensive line. So I was looking at Garrett Dellinger tape earlier today. I was looking specifically at the South Carolina game, which was week three, I believe. And that was the game where LSU kind of scored and wanted to get a 2-point conversion to pull ahead. And then they couldn't get it. It was just kind of back and forth and back and forth. And ultimately the run game did it. And they actually ran off of left guard to do it. So I think a lot of football, but particularly in the offensive line, is when you make mistakes, how do you respond? And not just that physical attribute, but the mental fortitude is huge. It's, you know, especially to come from there to the AFC North. I'm sure that was a huge part of the scouting process on the Ravens end.
Yeah, I would feel very confident that they had some discussions with him at least. And it might have just been the scout that really was taking a look at him and, you know, wanted to talk to him at that time. Or it might have been more of a formal process, like a combine type situation. But anyway, I don't think Dellinger was at the combine because he did pro day testing. Still could have been there. I just honestly don't know in his case. The coach, the offensive line coach that has been around for quite some time now. He played at Oklahoma from 99 to 02 at guard, is Brad Davis. Didn't play in the NFL that I can see, and immediately after his college career was at Southern Lab High School in Louisiana. I don't know what lab is potentially short for. And then he's had a whole bunch of other jobs since, landing as the LSU interim head coach in 2021, been the offensive line coach from 22 to the present.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, those guys have a lot of football knowledge, and to be able to step in and be an offensive line coach, a lot of times those guys, I feel like, stay and are so committed. A lot of times, if you
stay in that role, is what you mean.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Right, exactly. So a lot of times I feel like guys that get promoted or seek promotion are quarterback coaches or defensive coordinators or, offensive line guys. Like I think of Dante Scarnecchia at New England for all those years and Jim Coletto here. And then, you know, of course, Joe D. Those guys are stalwarts at their positions. So if you get a good one, they traditionally stay, if not that same school in the area.
I agree with that.
A lot of stuff to fall back on, a lot of wisdom he learned.
Yeah, I completely agree with you about offensive line coaches staying in the role, too. We've had that discussion before in this show, so I won't continue in here. But previously, Dellinger did have other injuries. He had a broken hand and a grade 2 MCL sprain. As far as I'm concerned, the testing he did answers any question about his readiness at this point. So I was excited about the pick when it occurred. Actually, I'll say after reviewing tape after it had occurred, let me put it that way. But he's you know, looks to be a solid pro prospect at this point. I had some notes from watching him play that I thought he's a plus combination blocker. I thought he released on time and was decisive in level two. Didn't have any issues holding the back end of a combination block, which is definitely something I want to see. I would assume that he would generally have the grip strength to do it with his kind of bench, but you never know. And also you want to make sure that he doesn't have problems with either his anchor or push pull balance issues that can get him in trouble, like John Simpson. But didn't have any problem with the back end of combination blitz. Like every offensive lineman, somewhat lungy when he gets into level two, and at the line of scrimmage as well, for that matter. It's one of the reasons he probably graded a little low, although I don't have the play-by-play grading from PFF, but he could get over his feet a little bit, and he was vulnerable there to the push-pull. So you don't want to be caught often in that situation where you reach so far, you get so far out front that the defensive lineman realizes this, and then they develop a counter to what you're doing, and they just basically pull you on your face.
Right, and I agree, and I saw a lot of the same things that you mentioned, and I feel like he is going to do well to establish that anchor first, because the Ravens aren't going to put him, hopefully he's not going to be put in if there's an injury. Hopefully that really doesn't happen to where he needs to be put in a situation where the game and the season depends on it. That I think that would be worst case scenario. But assuming all goes well and he's able to kind of hone his craft in the background until that time comes where he is called upon to play significant snaps, I feel like he has a lot. He has the right set of ingredients, that right foundation. He just needs to put it together and find how it works for him and get up to speed. Like the technique, I think, like you mentioned, is fixable. The technique issues that he needs to be fixed, they're fixable. But at the same time, the Ravens are in a good spot because they're not, I want to say they're not desperate, because generally you don't draft someone in the seventh round depending on them needing them.
Needing them to play right away, that would be a losing shot.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You want those guys to be your first and second round players, and then third, fourth, fifth, you're looking for quality starters, maybe special teamers, and then sixth and seventh round players generally, Brock Purdy notwithstanding, are your guys who are going to develop. And one of the good things for Dellinger is there's opportunity. I mean, there's not a, Edwin Mulatalo type who's just has that job by the reins, or Kevin Zeitler when he had the right guard position when he was here. I still said they let him go, but I understand. Anyway, Dellinger has what it takes, I think, to be a good quality backup, but he's going to need to be patient, I think.
All right. So a couple more points about him in terms of mobility, because this is a big issue for Dellinger. He will play for the Ravens, I would presume, either left guard or center. I think the Ravens right guards for 25, 26, and maybe beyond that will come from some combination of Fa'alele or Cleveland. That Fa'alele has the job and he's the incumbent, and he looks plenty good to me down the stretch to hold this job for a few years. In fact, I kind of wish the Ravens would get on their horse right now and try and extend him. Now, we're recording this on June 10th. By the time you hear it, it may already have happened. But he's a player that I think it would make a lot of sense if you can get the right dollar amount on the contract to extend at this point, as opposed to waiting. But anyway, that means that the left guard and center positions, and left guard is open this year, and probably Dellinger is out of the picture for getting the job without injuries, basically handing it to him. But next year, Tyler Lindebaum might not be here. And if that's the case, the Ravens are going to need to figure out how to address that problem. And they might do it via the draft. They certainly might. Or they might decide, hey, we don't want to spend a lot of draft capital in that position. We think Dellinger could be the guy. And that was one of the interesting revelations of today's podium time from George Warhop. I asked him, what's the plan if Tyler Lindebaum is gone in 2026 in terms of potential replacements? And he said that both Deli, was talking about Dellinger, and Reed Holsky were going to get additional snaps at center. So I expected we'll cross that bridge when it'll come to it. An answer that wasn't going to give us anything to sink my teeth into, but this was pretty good that he thought Dellinger, and he specifically said Dellinger has time at center at LSU, which I actually didn't realize either. So definitely a possibility that if the contract situation doesn't work out with Lindebaum, that he's the guy next year.
That's something that they're going to have to absolutely deal with. You're looking at him playing virtually 100%, I think 98.6% of snaps. Lindebaum, that is, last year. Mm-hmm. They took him in the first round, and drafting a center in the first round is it's pretty bold. And so you have to believe in that guy. So I go on that. Plus, Linderbaum hasn't done anything since being drafted to disappoint the Ravens really at scale. And so I have to think they're going to get it done. I have to think that, of course, he's not on the level of Lamar in terms of financial negotiations, but having gone through and survived that Lamar contract negotiation and seeing how well Linderbaum plays with him, they're going to, I'm sure they've already had talks, but I would hope it gets done before training camp. That would be my hope.
It would be the ideal time, because as soon as he faces live fire, he starts taking risk. And certainly by the he won't play in the preseason, I don't think, but they have a couple of joint practices. So that'll be some live fire. They have other padded practices, which really tells you just how little time you have to see what your physical positions can really do. I mean, you have a few padded practices during the year, and even then you're taking care of your teammates. You have a couple of joint practices per year where you're not taking care of the opponents. You say you are, and you try and set the rules of the practice such that you're not going to chop block or cut block. But I mean, your guys are going after it. And that's why you have fights sometimes that break out at those joint practices where you have it. But then, you know, during the year, they brother-in-law it with each other, and then they don't get into games. And you might be a year from now and not know anything about who Garrett Dellinger is as a football player, other than a few preseason snaps that he'll get against, you know, some questionable levels of competition coming up this year. And you know, he'll have another chance next year as well, but they'll have already made their draft decision prior to that.
Yeah, totally agree. So, but you made a great point that it's twofold, where they want to get Linderbaum signed, but then he's obviously going to start. But if for whatever reason they don't get him signed this year, which I don't foresee, but if they don't, okay, well, what if you don't sign him and he gets hurt, you know, in the middle of the season? You don't have him signed. You don't want to put out a seventh rounder. I don't know who else they would put in, because unfortunately Patrick McCary's not with us anymore. But then also your Super Bowl hopeful season is it's already in progress. So you have to figure that out sooner rather than later.
Going with Garrett Dellinger though at center, if they had to do that at midseason, would be a hell of a lot better than having to go with Cooper Rush at quarterback, with any number of other players on the edge if they lost two guys there, with anybody else at middle linebacker if they lost Roquan. I mean, you know, they've got a litany of stars here that if they got hurt really damaged their possibility of winning. I actually think Linderbaum is one of the lower end players on that list. You know, if you had 12 guys, he's probably number 10, 11, or 12. Of the guys who would really hurt you. There would be some line issues, no doubt about that. It could be difficult. I'm happy that the organization is preparing for the worst, given the contract given to Cam Jurgens, which is completely out of line with the Creed Humphrey contract. It doesn't make any sense. I'm not sure if you know, but I'm not sure if the listeners know, but Cam Jurgens has a 4-year, $68 million contract at $17 million AAV. Creed Humphrey, who is far and away the best center in the league and towers over Linderbaum in terms of his level of play, is making $18 million AAV. So you'd hope that, you know, to be reasonable, you'd want him to make less than Creed Humphrey, and you'd probably want him to make more than Jurgens, who's maybe a league average center, and is, you know, is just overvalued, frankly, by what the Eagles have given him. And then it doesn't leave you any room. I mean, you can't let him set the market. I'd be whole against that. But you can give him $16 million for 4 years of 16 AAV for 4 years. I'd be okay with that. But I'm not okay with $19 million AAV for 4 years. I don't think he's worth it. And I think you need to figure out what your next move is if that's how the negotiations end up going.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think the one thing that is working in Linderbaum's favor in a way in the Ravens' favor is, you know, it's only going to get harder to get a deal done with time, not just because for time, but also the salary cap. And the Ravens, you know, there's a lot of moving parts, and the cap's going to go up in 26. But right now, as according to Over the Cap, they have $13.2 million in cap space. So not a lot when you consider Mark Andrews is up and all these other guys are up as well. So again, time is of the essence.
Yeah. It's important. He would be on my list of the important guys to sign, and he'd be one of the guys who would make the most money of the guys assigned. So like he would command a higher salary than Isaiah Likely, say, and also than Travis Jones. But Isaiah Likely can be franchised, and Travis Jones to me is the absolute heart and soul of the pass rush. I'd have to figure out a way to get him signed. I wouldn't give him $16 million a year, don't get me wrong. So right. I'm not saying he's a more valuable player than Leonard, but I'm saying he's maybe a more important guy to get signed. So that's anyway, that's where I am with that. I want to go back to Dellinger because we've got a little off track here. Not that it's terrible, but he's only had three penalties in over 2,000 college snaps, which is absolutely fantastic. You know, it's one every 660 or 670 or so. It's 1/7 the rate of John Simpson through 2024. So John Simpson was a high penalty interior offensive lineman that Ravens fans are familiar with. And I, was beating on him a lot for how he didn't really improve his penalty rate with the Ravens. But Dellinger is a guy who does not get penalized or has not got penalized a lot at the college level.
Yeah. And that goes back to what we were talking about earlier with how well he was taught at LSU.
Yeah.
Those kinds of things. You can definitely teach a guy, say, don't do this or set your feet this way against this kind of front that we're going to face this week. But the player has to execute it. And the player, especially in pressure situations when LSU is down, they have to not panic. And so that's very impressive. He looked pretty mature in that regard. I didn't know that stat, so it doesn't surprise me. But that's something the Ravens, if nothing else, if he can just give them solid minutes or plays and not commit penalties, that's going to be huge, because the last thing you need is for Lamar to break a run or for Zay to break a big yards after catch play and it to come back because Dellinger was holding, or something, or chop block when he wasn't on the same page as a tackle. Yeah, something like that. So that, I'm telling you, puts a coach's heart at ease to hear that stat.
Okay, so I want to know why that is not valued properly at the NFL level. Because I'm in agreement with you entirely, by the way. And my system has enormous negative scores are involved with penalties. And the basic theory is that it's one man who creates a penalty, but it takes a whole lot of good blocks to get a good run going. And it takes, Derrick Henry breaks off an 87-yard run, let's say, against Buffalo. Yeah, there's a whole lot of people contributing to that. It's not even the right play to look at, because I want to look at something that has the opposite value to what a penalty costs you. So that might maybe that's a 20-yard run is the thing that is the opposite in terms of difference from a mean EPA level for a play. So you can understand what I'm saying. But if your average EPA per play was 0.03 on a run play and a penalty costs you, I don't know, it'd be a significant amount, but it might be as much as a whole point that a holding penalty would cost you. Other penalties would be less. The other side of that is you might need a 25-yard run or a 20-yard run to offset that in terms of value. I mean, if I look at what it takes to get a 20-yard run done, it takes a village. It takes, half of those 11 people might be responsible for it. And, even if you don't include Lamar as being responsible for it, Lamar definitely had a factor in it, even if he was just a decoy on
the exactly. Yep.
But the penalty is one guy. And that's where I think those things, and I know the maximum score that PFF can have right now, or sorry, the minimum score they can have is a -1 on a play for a penalty. And it's like, you can't possibly have these graded relatively in any kind of reasonable sense if you have a score where that's the worst, but you can give out +2s for some other things. It just makes no sense. So anyway, that's something. I really love PFF's work, by the way. I want to make that clear. They're still the source for going to find stuff about the offensive line, but they have some weighting problems I have a hard time getting over. Mm-hmm. And in particular, they're very bad at center. In terms of overweighting run blocking and underweighting penalties.
Yeah, I mean, I think coaches, commentators say it sometimes, but if there's so much that goes into it, you can't. I mean, obviously penalties are bad for the offense, but how bad is a very complex answer. But basically, you go into a game thinking, let's say I have these, if I'm, say I'm Todd Monk and I go in and say, we want to do this, 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 and this on offense. We want to run at them on first downs at this side. We want to go against this corner. And then based on injuries down in distance, that changes. But every time, if I get a holding call, even if it's an incomplete pass, you don't quote unquote cost this yardage, that changes the play call. It's now first and 20. That changes your personnel. And sometimes your personnel that's needed is inferior and you want to, it just makes you, to summarize, less stable. And as an offense, that completely goes against your preparation.
Right. Well, so this should be fairly obvious to people. This should be fairly obvious. And as a defensive coordinator at the high school level, I don't know if you think about defense at the same level, but the NFL level, it is way too freaking easy to move the football and to do it regularly. Completion percentages are through the roof relative to what they used to be when I was a kid. I mean, you know, a 50% completion rate across the league might have been about right for the early 70s in the NFL. Now completion rates, you know, across the league, 65-66% right now. I mean, just that is a big difference. Teams are smarter about playing four down football, so they don't give away a lot of good offensive opportunities that way. And they are more likely to get more points per drive. There's many fewer turnovers. And the defense is left with fewer opportunities to create variance, to generate variance that they need to in order to get the offense off the field. And I don't really know if that's true at the high school level. Maybe you could just continue to sit back and play 1970s style defense because the quarterbacks are not that good and offenses are not generally that good. And, you know, your run defense advantages can still weigh through on that opposing offense enough. You can't do that at the NFL level. You just can't do it. Offenses are too damn good. And, you know, at 5 yards a play on average, if you let them have that every play, they walk down the field on you and score every time. And in the past, that wasn't necessarily true. There was enough built-in variance for the defense to get off the field. Now they have to gamble like hell to get off the field.
Yeah. No, that's so true. And it's interesting you make that analogy between high school and pros. What we've seen is it's the same concept, but the talent level is different. Meaning with – and it didn't start with Cam Newton or Lamar Jackson, but when you have those guys who are not just occasional runners, but they are feature part of the offense running the ball, you add a number to the offense, so to speak. Instead of playing with 10, there's 11 players you really need to account for. Players and teams in the high school level do that, but there's a talent gap enough to where, you know, Perry Hall, we were on the more athletic side. We were 12-1 2 years ago, and then I think 10-3 last year. So we did very well. But when it got to the state semifinals and those big playoff games, everybody was good. At the NFL, everybody's good. And so Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts are the three guys that are just getting those little inches sometimes, but that keeps the chains moving and that ups the points. So, yeah, I mean, you know, when the Ravens in 2000, you probably know this off the top of your head, I think 165 points over,
that's right,
20 games or whatever it was. So that comes out to what, 10.3 or 4 per game?
The 165 is actually the number of points allowed by the defense because they allowed 21.
Right.
Okay. Points by the offense during that season. So it's 8.3 points per game. Yeah.
I'm sure it's 167. The average is at least doubled for a good defense now. So, and the yardage is out of control, as you said. But you see guys like Zach Orr, albeit he was in his first year last year, a lot of times it looks like, what are they doing? This offense is moving right down the field. Or Mike McDonald, even in his first, you know, against the Dolphins, that one game. Mm-hmm. They go down the field real quick sometimes, but the trick, and even Steve Spagnuolo with the Chiefs, he's kind of known for this, where they'll give you yards, but they really try to just focus their efforts in the red zone. If they can hold you to 3 more times than not, the odds say they have a chance to come back and win. So different game for sure.
Well, getting a smaller field is definitely easier to defend. Okay, let's go back and talk about Garrett Dellinger. What makes a good season for him this year?
First and foremost, I want him to stay healthy. I want him to just be there however he's needed, whether it's on punt team or backup left guard, backup center, whatever it is. Get good reps whenever they come, but stay healthy. Don't take the little things for granted. I also want him to, I wrote down, bring his hips with his arms. Like you mentioned, lunging a lot of times. He's smart enough, and I don't think it's a laziness. I think he just needs more practice at bringing his hips and his power with his arms so he's not overextended and out-leveraged. Because even the really big defensive tackles at this level could tear him apart if he doesn't clean that up a little bit. He played, according to PFF, 95% of his college reps at left guard. So he's going to know that footwork, but I would encourage him. He's going to do what his coaches tell him, but I would like him to learn center as well, just in case, and get comfortable with that. To be great, I'd like him to
first. My good, and then we'll do
gotcha.
That.
No problem.
So I'll just read it off because it's similar. Makes the team. Chance to make the team is probably 40-50% in Dellinger's case. He's not a sure thing, but if they're giving him reps at center, I think I would raise that number because I wrote this a couple days ago, and I'm thinking this is actually something I think the number is higher based on what I heard from Warhop today. As a backup IOL and get some playing time, some playing time for me in a good season might be 75 to 200 snaps. Could be a sixth offensive lineman, could be a rotational player. By the way, that's another thing that came up today was Warhop said he really didn't want to play rotationally. He wanted one guy to be the starter. And so he says, let Cleveland and Voorhees fight it out is literally what he said. And we'll see what happens kind of thing. But Dellinger wasn't mentioned in that particular case. But he could get it time in as a end of game guy or an injury fill in. I have no specific expectations of his level of play. And oftentimes with rookie linemen, you get a substandard result. That doesn't mean they don't have the proper amount of runway to still take off. In particular, a C-minus kind of season from a rookie offensive lineman is generally outstanding and says really good things about what's coming in the future. I think Roger Rosengarten had a season that was quite good last year. And it's not that the good was so dominant because he got a ton of help last year. It's that what it means for the runway is really what makes him exciting in terms of the future and what he can do. But anyway, for getting back to Garrett for a second, I want him to have no lingering injuries, issues with a leg injury. It's always possible he's going to have some sort of soft tissue thing that's going to come up. I want health for everybody, but for him, I want him to get the preseason reps because it's some of the only live fire he's going to see before the Ravens have to make their 26 decisions at center. And he needs to remain in the Ravens' 2026 plans with possible departures of Falele, Linderbaum, and Cleveland. That's a lot of potentially important offense. So it could be the Ravens' entire interior offensive line is gone next year. It would be Voorhees and Dellinger and draft picks who would be, trying to, say Mack and players like that who might be around still to take spots.
Yeah, that's right on. And it's interesting. The Ravens were very clear. And, Eric DaCosta, I forget when he said it. I think it was definitely before the draft, but he said, we're going to look at a lineman or two or words to that effect. They usually don't say anything. Mm-hmm. So even that just one little remark showed that they knew going into the draft, into the scouting season and so forth, they were going to look hard at the offensive line. So those eyes and that attention is going to be on that position, not just Dellinger, but Ronnie Stanley, just everybody. They need to have everyone continue to perform, even though they had a good year last year. So Dellinger is going to have opportunity. It's not going to maybe be as much as he might want early, but those preseason games, you made a great point. They're going to be huge. They're going to be huge. And the other thing is to remember is that Dellinger is going from playing blocking for Garrett Nussmeier to Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. So this
big change.
It's going to change a lot and quickly. So if he's mentally as strong as we think, that's only going to work in his favor.
All right. What does a great season look like to you?
I'd like him to, he's probably not going to start if all things being equal, if no one really gets hurt, but to get, a good amount of of playing time. I would like to say 50% of the overall snaps at special teams, offense. Hopefully the Ravens have some blowout wins he can get in. That number might be way too high. I don't know, but I just feel like if he can get some significant snaps this year, that would be a plus. Because again, live fire, like you mentioned. But the biggest thing for me is that I want him to unlock some new skills in the run scheme. Not that he doesn't know them, but I don't think he's, I think it's going to be a different run scheme that he played in at LSU.
If you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line up of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis, so you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies, and let me tell you, about takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
A lot of the plays that I saw him play on tape were duo plays where he's initially double teaming and then going up to someone else, like you said, at the second level. A lot of the Ravens schemes, they run power read. So it's a power play, but Lamar's reading it. So one of the guards is pulling outside zone where you have to go in concert with, you know, all the other guys
Elephant
around you.
Parade. Yep.
Exactly. And, you know, Derrick Henry is great at those plays. So the Ravens and Todd Monken and George Warhop are going to call plays that are going to amplify what Lamar and Derek do very well. So I want him to really focus on that. And I checked out the run pass splits for the Ravens and LSU last year. Ravens ran 54% of the time. LSU ran 37% of the time. Yep. So there's a full 17.0% difference run pass, 17% more run that Dellinger is going into. So like you said, he was more solid in the pass block aspect, that run blocking. They're going to learn real quick whether he can do it or not.
Right. That is the potential weakness there. Okay. I bet my great season makes the team the significant playing time. I'll call that 200 plus snaps since it was 75 to 200 on a good season. At some point during the season, play is at or slightly below the league average, but above the replacement level. So previous level had no expectations of level of play. This is kind of like, maybe it's a C minus level he's producing at. I define the replacement level in terms of my own scoring system as kind of somebody who's on the DF border. Those guys are generally available, but a good C minus guy, that can be hard to find. That'd be pretty terrific if he could be that. He shows enough in terms of mobility and other positional traits that he's the is in among the top options on the roster to replace a departing interior offensive lineman in 26. So there's going to be multiple potential people who that might be. It could be Cleveland, could be Fa'alele, could be Linderbaum. But Garrett Dellinger puts himself front and center in a 200-plus snap season to take one of those spots would be to me, the definition of a great season for him.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that would be that would even be a bonus. But 200 snaps, I think, would be perfect. It wouldn't be too much, but it would be enough to prove if he can do it or not.
Yeah, it's basically three full games. So, you know, he wouldn't get that kind of by accident. Something would have to happen in his favor, a bad play, a small injury, a short-term injury that gets him in there. But I think that Voorhees was maybe right around that level this last season, maybe slightly above it. I'd have to actually take a look. But let's move over. Let's talk about Adafi Owe a little bit and what makes a good season for him. But he's entering his fifth season. He's age 26. He missed four games last year with an injury, still finished with a 10-sack season, played outside linebacker, was primarily a situational pass rusher because they really had to keep him healthy. I'm sorry, I might have that for the wrong player. Those four games missed. Is that correct for Owe last year? Did he miss some games?
No, I was going to look that up.
Okay. Well, anyway, look at it while you will. Because he had a lot of snaps, a lot of total pass snaps on the field to have missed four games. But anyway.
Sorry to interrupt. He played in every game, had 10 starts.
Okay. Terrific. Yeah. Okay. So did 10 starts is just a function of them saving him towards the end of the year for situational pass rushing, but they only had him and Van Noy. His pressure rate was not great this last year, but he did have a good finish rate. And so, I think we can look at that and find some things to improve on. The other thing is he's enormous this year. He's gained 20 pounds. And you had a post about it today. I'll let you follow with that thread.
So I was at OTAs a couple of weeks ago, and it was one of the practices where the media wasn't there. I just went as a guest, and so I was standing pretty close to the field, like right on the sideline. And so he comes walking by me, and I didn't know who it was at first. I saw the jersey, but it didn't look like him at first. And then I started to think about like his legs and his arms, his chest, like everything is just, you could see he's been seriously in the weight room. I mentioned on X today that he looked like Myles Garrett. Not exactly like Myles Garrett, because I don't think him and Aaron Donald are kind of creatures of their own, but always is taken a huge step on the weight room, and physically he was just imposing. And so he's always been athletic, but to have that strength, hopefully that translates. I think that's going to be a big plus for the Ravens.
Now, he'd been a guy coming out of school who had all kinds of speed and the freakish athleticism that has really never translated to the field into a whole hell of a lot. And even this last season, while I think that it was nice that he improved his sack total, he did it at the expense of his pressure total, meaning his pyramid denormalized, got very vertical with a 50%, which is really an unsustainable finish rate. And that's his percentage of his pressures that go for either a quarterback hit or a sack. And that's you just, since that's not sustainable, you want a higher base of the pyramid in terms of pressures. He had that in 2023. When he had a lower sack total. I'm not hoping he gets a lower sack total. I'm just hoping his base of the pyramid improves in terms of pressures, and he will create opportunity for others if that's the case. Some of this additional size should really improve his speed to power rush. And so while he was depending, I think, fairly heavily on counters and not getting offensive tackles to overset as much as he would like based on kind of a slow get off, which is plagued him, that he hasn't been nearly as effective in terms of getting those counters to work. Now you go to the half man move to the outside, they have to start respecting it more if there's a speed to power component to it that's deadly.
Totally agree. And he has, you mentioned athleticism. I whenever I watch him and I'll see a play where he either dips under or just uses his great length, and I'm just thinking, I know he's trying. I'm not saying he's doesn't care by any means, but I'm just wishing, like, man, I wish he could do that more often. Because when he flashes big time. And so I have to think this new muscle mass would only help him sustain that.
Well, hopefully. And hopefully it doesn't slow him up in terms of get off, because he can't afford any more of that. But it could also make him a more effective bull rusher. You know, just you not every move you make is a half man move. Sometimes you have to go to the bull. And when you do, you need to have some oomph behind that, and just walking the tackle back occasionally, playing low enough to do that, is certainly something that could improve his game. What else do we have to say about him? We talked about his get off and his kind of his low pressure rate overall. So I don't need to do that again. I still think he needs to use his athleticism a lot better than he is right now. Now, the issue for him is probably mostly get off related, but it might not be all get off related. It's somewhat related to timing. You got to time up your counter well. You want to go Eurostep or spin move or whatever it might be. You need to have a well-timed counter, generally speaking. Ed Norris was telling me he watched Oe make a spin move where he stayed in the same place. And that does happen. You don't always have perfect control over that.
Right.
But the goal, obviously, is to move up, you know, kind of one body space to the inside to get past that, get through that B gap, generally speaking, for a player on the rush side.
Yeah. That must be so frustrating when you just feel like either I have to try something or I believe in this, this is what I'm going to. And then the guy just stands right in your way and you look like, why did he do that? What was he thinking? It's like, all right, sometimes it's not always going to go your way.
All right. Now, the other thing that was interesting about Oe this year is they've never tried to really convert him to a Sam linebacker. They've kept him on the rush side. And part of it was hoping that he would develop into the pass rusher who would be devastating to offensive tackles. That was the thing I was most excited about in terms of the original draft pick of Adafi Oe, was that he was going to be able to be more athletic than every single left tackle he'd ever face. And that would force a lot of oversets and allow a good, well-developed set of counter moves, which we expected to come because he had zero sacks at Penn State in his last year, would create opportunity for him. He's had time to work with Chuck Smith, and he did, in fact, improve his sack total this last year, got into double digits on sacks. There's a lot to like there. It's just it's not sustainable with his current pressure rate. So he's got to improve his pressure rate to get that same sack level in all likelihood. In fact, he might have to have 50% more pressures to maintain his, a double-digit sack level.
Right. Yeah, I think a lot of that is going to come down to that. When you say the get-off, it's his first couple of steps, the very first part of the rush. Because whether you beat the guy straight out or you're setting him up for something, if those first two steps are off, not by accident, he might not block you by accident, but he's going to be in a lot better position to block you if you don't have a strategic plan in encounters. So I think it would be whenever he gets, probably not the preseason, but whenever he gets that first real game action, to really pay attention to those first two steps at it and his body angle, how far down he is, crouched down. If he's, I know he's pretty tall as edge rushers go, but look at those first two steps. And you mentioned it, Chuck Smith is the perfect coach for him to have because he's not going to cut away any slack. He's going to be direct, but he also has a lot of wisdom to share. So this, and another player going into a contract year.
Yep.
Oe is, he's going to have to get right, but if he gets right, it's going to be, I think, the unveiling of that special skill that the Ravens drafted him for.
Well, I certainly hope so. They didn't, I started to make another point here. They didn't try and convert him to Sam, even though the Ravens have really needed a Sam linebacker at every point since effectively Bowser got injured and left. They've needed a guy to step in on that Sam side and be that. Today, Mike Green, who's been doing a little bit on each side, but he was at Sam today, naked boot, right, tight end released. I didn't even see who the intended receiver was because Green got between Leary and was in whatever passing lane there was and just made the cleanest interception that you'll see, which means it was really a very bad read by Leary in truth. Yeah. But Green got his hands up, and I like seeing that Green had some ability to just play in space and make a play like that. Owe, you know, he has dropped the coverage a little bit, but it's much less than you would hope for and much less than we're used to for a Ravens outside linebacker at about 6.5% for his for the last year. I want to say it was like 30 out of right around 500 total snaps. So it's not a level that is, you know, that's saying they really trust him on the coverage side. On the other hand, it may be a case where they really thought they need him so much as a pass rusher, they couldn't drop him very often.
I feel like it's some of both. There's value to doing that. And, you know, whether he lines up at a seven technique or at the nose and then drops into a short zone, he can do that once in a while. And there's value. That's not just a gimmick. Like, there's a reason for that. But I think that number is right on where they want him to be, because ultimately, whether it's a pass rush or run, you want that size and length at the line of scrimmage. Conversely, say if he gets caught in a zone and you think, "Wow, he's such a good athlete. We want to use him more in those zones and mess with the offense's, the quarterback's field of vision." If the receiver, running back, whoever, the pass catcher that he's defending comes into his zone, makes any kind of move, Owe better be close to perfect with his footwork, because everybody else is running downfield. So if there's any open space, the guy's going to check it down or quick out or whatever, what have you. So I think they want to try to limit that. So I think those numbers are where they want him to be.
All right. Well, good chance that that certainly he'll be on the field on those downs at a minimum. They've got the three guys they have in Van Noy, Green, and Owe. They're going to get them as many of the total passing down snaps as they can. I don't think we're going to see a year where Tavius Robinson's third down snaps take off. I could be wrong, because it could happen due to injury, or it could happen because Robinson develops in some unexpected way, or maybe because Green isn't ready. It could be that as well. But I would think that they're going to get as many possible snaps out of the big three as they can. And, you know, in so doing, it actually creates a little bit of an issue for them in terms of how do they rotate three guys for that sort of opportunity set. It might not be enough by itself, which means some players may have to play more first downs. The only guy who's an obvious first down player is Robinson. I mean, he's the only one. And other than that, it's a real question as to Van Noy probably might be the second best edge setter they have. Maybe Green can do some of that, but maybe Adisa Isaac is a guy, but he'll have some problems getting activated. I don't think Ajabo is going to make the team. So I'm not anticipating much from him on early downs. So, you know, it'll be an interesting job in terms of who has that early down responsibility and who's on the field for more there. And maybe we'll see a little more of a way on those downs. They certainly had him bubble wrapped last year for third down.
Yeah, I would love to see Adisa Isaac get some more action for sure. But I think that Van Noy and Owe are going to be the guys. And then I think, let me say it this way. If I was Zach Orr, I would bring Green along slowly, because we know he's going to be explosive at some point. I would want to put Van Noy and Owe in the best possible positions. And then however Green and Robinson fit off of that, that's how I would go. But right. I think it's a good problem to have. Obviously, the sack numbers were great last year, and I think, you know, you spoke specifically to Owe and hit some of his rates. I don't know if they're going to be as good this year, but you know, if the Ravens can just get those guys in a couple different packages and personnel groupings and just go hunt, I think that the interior is going to be solid. And what I mean by that is, you know, a lot of times when you pass rush, some people forget you need defensive tackles to either two gap or hold their point of attack. You need inside linebackers who are going to cover the interior gaps. For the most part, particularly on the line with Broderick Washington, Travis Jones, we talked about, you know, Matt Ibike, that's handled. So you have more freedom as an edge rusher now. That said, if you don't have specific uses in the game, specific play calls or blitzes and stunts, you may not maximize their talent. But again, with Chuck Pagano coming in and these Dean Pease's came in, I think mid-year last year, mm-hmm. these consultants are coming in. There's just one extra set of eyes, two extra sets of eyes to be able to help out and say, why don't you try this guy here? So, all in all, I think it's going to be a good problem to have. And then again, if, you know, Foye gets hurt or Van Noy gets hurt, Green can step on and then they go from there.
Right. They have not gone to the rush nickel much the last couple of years because they've had such good interior rush. And, you know, we just talked about this obviously in the Dellinger thing, but Travis Jones, I mean, he drives the Ravens' entire pass rush. He commands double teams on the inside. He and Matt Ibike are always paired together on any passing down. There's nobody else they want on the field other than that particular double team or double. I'll say those guys, set it all up for the rest of the pass rush. It kind of means, though, that even if you thought there was one guy who could do it, and maybe always done a little bit of rush nickel from the inside of the pass, he's kicked inside a little bit, but none of those three guys are really ideal for it. Any one of them could line up off ball if they wanted to and get an extra guy. If something were to happen to Matt Ibike and Travis Jones were active, I think they'd find a way to get that foursome on the field where Travis Jones is an interior guy. I think also they could go to Aeneas Peebles on this. And I think that they don't even really have to have Travis Jones on the field in some situations. And it's like with a lead, when you're trying to close out a game where the opponent's going to pass every single down, Aeneas Peebles is a fine guy to have at nose tackle. Right. He's undersized, but the other team can't run on you without running the clock out on themselves. And so you build yourself an opportunity to get him a lot of pinned ears back pass rushes. So I think the net of this is I don't think the Ravens are going to move to a lot of rush nickel this year all of a sudden. So if they're going to get three on the field at one time, they're going to it's going to have to be something that's an unusual scheme play,
right?
To get them all there,
right? And I'm glad you mentioned Aeneas Peebles because he's a little undersized. Certainly he's not like a Travis Jones. Not many are, but. I am a big draft guy, and Gray Zabel is my favorite player in the draft this year. He went to the Seahawks in the first round. Mm-hmm. In the Senior Bowl, Aeneas Peebles got a lot of reps against him, and Zabel won, if you want to call it that, but Peebles had, in some individual reps, did beat Zabel. So Peebles is a guy who's just kind of like a perfect rotational guy the Ravens always have, who's smart. He's going to be tough. He's going to get, penetration in the backfield or based on the scheme, just hold the point of attack. Whether it's zero, three technique, one, whatever it looks like, I have full confidence that he's going to be there. Yeah. The last thing I'll say is this, when you said it would basically take something extraordinary for all three to be on the same time at once, I totally agree. I don't think they need to. I think fans are going to want to see Mike Green because he's an exciting prospect. But Kyle Van Noy is still playing well, and OA, as of right now, his last season was very good. So we'll see how this coming year goes. I think I would just encourage patience because if the Ravens have to put all three on the field at the same time, it might not be a good situation.
Right. No, they won't have to do that, but they're going to have to commit to getting Green meaningful pass rush snaps this year. And the reason is pretty simple. Van Noy and Oway are in the last year of their contracts, and the Ravens need to decide, is their problem that they need two players or that they need three players after this year if they don't sign either of those guys? And they might need only two, which might mean one re-signing and one draft pick. Or they might be in a worse situation than that if Mike Green doesn't work out as a rookie. And they say, well, it's going to be, he's probably not going to produce for us till year three. We've got to wait on our hands, and we got to find a way to get through that. So part of that, they can do through the draft. Part of that they can do by working their magic with older patchwork pass rushers that they've been so good at. But it's Green is going to have to get on the field this year. There's not an alternative. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't see a way that they can, you know, have him play 175 snaps and, you know, as a situational pass rusher, and that'll be sufficient. I think he's going to see a lot more action.
Yeah. I wouldn't. I think Ravens fans will see him sooner than later for sure.
Okay. All right. Let's go back. Adafi Owe, what does a good season look like for him?
Sustain last year's input, meaning his effort and his technique to do that and continue to get better. Obviously, the numbers may not be there. So I'm not saying he has to sustain that. You said a couple of times it's not sustainable, his pressure rate. But really, I want him to sustain last year's input without losing speed. Because we talked about how he's added, I think you said 20 pounds of muscle. And so if he can improve, let's say 1% every day or just gradually, and not do anything spectacular, but still get a lot of pressure, more than a half dozen sacks, I think that will be a good year.
All right.
Yeah. Just, you know, don't overcomplicate it, really.
All right. I don't have a bunch of specific statistical goals, but I'll say this. I tend to be more qualitative in general. Stays at the rush linebacker, not asked to play much in coverage. Snap count is limited, tops out at 60% by sharing the job with some combination of Green, Isaac, and Robinson. Quality of his pressures improves with a third year of Chuck Smith and additional weight. And that's the quality of his pressures. So I'm saying, okay, he's got to get some quantity increment too, or he's not going to maintain the sack total. But the quality also can improve in terms of having more of those, getting him close or to sacks, such that that's a way for him to maintain a portion of that impact. But I do think in a good year, his pass rush pyramid widens at the base to accommodate a similar quarterback hit plus sack total. And that'll take a lot actually for that to happen. And he plays the run well when he's in, whatever that means. If the Ravens lead a lot of games, he may well not be in on too many damn run plays. If the Ravens decide that they want to use Mike Green as a situational rush end, then Owe may be more of a guy they use at Sam on early downs, you know, that we hadn't seen in a while. So I think he's got a lot of ways he can help the team, even if he does not get 10 sacks again. I think that in large part a higher pressure base is going to lead to more total sacks for the team if he's able to contribute that.
Yep. That would be a good year for him. And what I think would be a great year, I would like to see him really just be a monster, meaning just be a game wrecker, draw double teams. You know, you know way more than me, but I don't recall seeing him draw a lot of double teams.
Well, Travis Jones gets them all.
Well, right. Yeah. So, now, part of that would be him lining up, maybe as, you know, they go to a four front with Van Noy, Travis Jones, and then Owe at the three technique, and then Mike Green outside him. I mean, who knows? But I would like to see him be so dominant, even if he doesn't get the sack numbers, to where they slide a protection or they add a tight end on his side. That would be great for me, in my opinion. Run grade, pass grade. Run last year, these are PFF numbers, 66 run grade, 73 pass grade. I'd like to see him increase each by 5 to 10 points, maybe not so much in the pass rush grade because was already high. He only has, if I'm not mistaken, one career pass defense, so he can't always help that. But if he has the length, get the hands up at the line of scrimmage, that would be, if he could get a few of those, who knows? Sometimes those change games. And then set a new career high in forced fumbles, which would only quote unquote, but his career high in forced fumbles is 3. If you can get to 4, again, it all works together. You have Jones getting double teams. Matty Bique is a beast in his own right. He's going to get a lot of opportunity to maybe not bring the guy down, but strip the ball, or running back comes across and he's holding a guy off on the edge, gets the running back coming to the sideline on his side, strip the ball. Like, those are the kinds of plays that are kind of bonuses but he has the capability to do that. And so I would like to see him really take that next step and just, like I said, be a monster. Be a, you know, I don't necessarily think he may make the Pro Bowl, but just that kind of shoot for the stars mentality, because he's put in the work physically, and there's other players around him that are going to give him the opportunity to excel, both on the defensive line. Of course, Kyle Hamilton on the back end, making the quarterback hold the ball. So it's all shaping up for him to have a career season.
Yeah, there are lots of ways he could benefit from other people on his team. And there's lots of first pressures he could deliver personally as well. But here's my great season. Develops the first step necessary to take his pass rush to another level. Speed to power improves with additional weight. Recognized as one of the league's elite pass rushers, whether or not that translates to a double-digit sack number in the Ravens system. So he may be generating a lot of the pressures, commanding more double teams, as you've indicated. I mean, if they slide protection from guard and throw a lot of help protections that way, God help them in terms of what Travis Jones is going to do one-on-one this year. I mean, he's going to create all kinds of pressure. And he's the guy who plays next to Oway. And I can't see teams doing it. Now, on the other hand, they could chip block him. They can use the running back to go out there and get in his ribs a lot. They can, generally speaking, he avoids the tight end side, lines up opposite the naked tight end. So if you want to really protect with the tight end, you got to have two in the game. You got to play a YY formation.
Right.
Yeah. And that, right. And that most teams are not willing to do that, but if you can force a formation on the other team, great.
Yeah.
I'm all for that. But, yeah. But I think whatever additional help goes his way, he's got to be able to deal with that and still create some value from that. Overall, his pass rush benefits from his own personal pressure total. So I'm saying the overall Ravens pass rush benefits from a higher pressure total from Oway, but Oway doesn't create the same 50% close rate he had last year. That'll drop off because it's not sustainable. And the team sack total hopefully will be approximately as good as it was last year. They played over their heads in a certain way last year to be second in the whole NFL in sacks. If they could do that again, they don't even, I'm not even talking from a ranking basis, but if they could average 3 sacks per game during the regular season or right almost that high 40s, maybe, that'd be tremendous for this team.
Yeah. That's a really good point you just made, because 3 sacks a game, if you think about it, not all the time, but if you think about it, a lot of times those are going to be on 3rd and long plays, maybe even 2nd and long, but after a penalty or a negative play, but generally 3rd downs, 3rd to medium or long. That means if you get a sack on 3rd and long, almost all the time the team's going to punt. Mm-hmm. So that's one, or, you know, let's say like the number you said, 3 possessions in which the other team won't score. In the AFC North,
you would love for it to be that good.
Yeah, right. So it's not always going to be that way, but those kinds of things, if you can do it consistently and you maybe get a forced fumble on one of those, it's a strip sack or something like that. So that kind of consistent pressure does wonders for the whole team, not just the defense.
I'll look at it a little different way, and I'll say that defense requires variance. And if you get 50 sacks in a year, that's 50 plays of fairly extreme variance you're putting on the offense that's going to strain them tremendously to come back from. You really can't come back from it on 3rd down, as you mentioned. But even we saw in the Cincinnati game, the key play towards winning that is the 2nd Cincinnati game or the 1st? The one where basically the Ravens got the game tied and it went to overtime. And I don't remember if that's the 1st or 2nd already, but Matabike got a sack on 1st down when Burrow had a chance to respond with what would have been a very easy field goal drive, or what should have been a very easy field goal drive. But Matabike came in for a 7-yard sack. Then he threw an incomplete. Then they had to run the ball on 3rd down to drain some clock, and they punted it away in what was a fantastic stop. I think that was the series after. So they got the interception that set up the touchdown by Humphrey, I believe. And then they didn't get the result they wanted somehow. Forgetting what went wrong, they scored too quick and they left too much time on the clock for Burrow to basically come back and kick a game-winning field goal against them, but they still were able to manage it because of the Matabike sack set them up so well.
Yeah, so look, they're going to be in good position to do that, but then, I'm just looking down my notes again. Something I miss on Oue is that we talked about counter moves and his get off, as you said. Sometimes I forget, but I just wrote down here, teams study your tape.
Yep.
So you're not just going to roll out and be able to do the same old thing. Not that he would, but just sometimes the Ravens benefited from a lot of breaks, but they also gave the other team some breaks. So the net positive, you know, I don't always like to predict records. I know it's a little off topic, but based on everything we know, it's going to be probably another 10 or 11 win season, grind it out. You have to wait till the end of the season type deal to see where you're going to be in the playoffs. They should get there, but a lot of that depends, interestingly enough, on the offensive and defensive lines, which is what we talked about tonight.
All right. Well, Mike, great talking football with you. Tell folks where they can reach you online if they have a question, they want to talk ball with you.
Ken, it was a pleasure as always. Thanks again for having me. I'm at Mike Fast NFL, Mike FAST NFL on X. And I post a lot about draft NFL stuff, not just the Ravens. I also write articles for Baltimore Sports and Life. And that's also found on X at BSL.
All right. Other folks out there, thanks for listening again. Really appreciate the pump and the numbers for the podcast and you guys' incredible loyalty to this show. If you don't mind, like and subscribe. If you're listening on YouTube, if this is the kind of content you want. If you want to do a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. And we're coming into that part of the off season where you have a long hiatus and some opportunities to talk about some topics that you folks are passionate about. And I want to do that and at least have 4, 5, 6 shows of that type. Could be anything you want to talk about that we can discuss in about 20 or 25 minutes. Mike, thanks again for joining me.
Thank you, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.